The Bastards of Boston Baseball Podcast.
Back to Folk. Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champion. Game over, series over, and the Red Sox are world champs again.
Yes, indeed. Here it comes. Another edition of the Bastards of Boston Baseball.
Boston Red Sox send out rookie Peyton Tolley to face the ace on the mound for the Pittsburgh Pirates, Paul Skeens. Despite a dazzling debut, the Red Sox bats fall predictably short, losing the first game of the series by a score of 4-2 and falling to 75 wins and 61 losses on the season. I'm Nick the Voice, joined by Doug Aitchison and Terry Cushman Jr., and we are the Bastards of Boston. Want more? You can go to bastardsofbostonbaseball.com for great written articles. Now, let's start with Tolley. This kid looked great, and it's such a shame that he ended up getting charged for two runs at the end of it, got pulled after 84 pitches, 5.1 innings pitched, but ultimately, I mean, eight strikeouts, great whip, and just fantastic debut for this kid. Very exciting to see such a young pitcher come up, even with a 3.38 ERA, despite, you know, such a great start. What'd you guys think?
I loved watching him those first five innings. He was absolutely electric to watch. And, you know, I'm not really that upset that we lost this game. You know, you go into it with a guy's first career start against the best pitcher in the league. I know the Pirates aren't good, but he is Paul Skeens, and we're throwing a guy out there for his first start. I wasn't really expecting I wasn't going into this thinking we need a win. I just wanted to see Peyton pitch good, see what we have, and he did that. And he gave me enough to be happy enough with what I saw with him to not be so upset that we lost this game.
I thought tonight could be an epic glimpse of the future. And, you know, we had a lackluster trade deadline. It wasn't what any of us really wanted. And we were seeing Peyton Tolley's name floated in trade packages. And, I mean, I would have loved Joe Ryan, and maybe that was the one package I might have put him in. But I just, we haven't developed pitching. We haven't really developed a homegrown ace outside of possibly Brian Bayo starting to emerge as a one or a two. But you know what? I'll settle for a two. If the next five guys end up being number twos, including Tolley, I'm good with that. But tonight was a perfect reason on why I'm not really willing to move any of our big arms. And it was fun to watch. And if we want to go negative here for a second, I didn't have a problem with him getting pulled after, you know, 84 pitches and two base runners. But don't go to Greg Weissert. You've got a guy in your bullpen who 14 times out coming into tonight's game has not given up a run. And that's Brennan Bernardino. And he was the guy early on in the season who you could bring in with runners on, and for the most part, until you overworked the hell out of him. And he was one of the most taxed relievers in Major League Baseball. He was the guy who could hold those runners and not plate them. But we went to Weissert for some stupid reason. And then, ironically, I forget who he even came in for, but Bernardino did come in to finish an inning. And it was the wrong spot. He should have been the guy. And had Cora made the right decision, Bernardino instead of Weissert, maybe Tolley gets the W tonight.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, Bernardino ended up getting the ninth inning and ultimately got out clean. I felt like we had a lot of guys that we could have gone on depending on matchups. We could have gone to a guy like Wilson, a guy like Matt. I wouldn't have even necessarily been opposed to throwing out a guy like Whitlock in that position that early on. I mean, I know that could be crazy, but I've never been married to the idea that, oh, you get the eighth, you get the ninth. You adjust. We were kind of gifted a run early on, and against Skeens, those are very precious. Unfortunately, I was very surprised at the Pirates' bullpen. Moretta, Mattson, and Santana, all three of them have very good ERAs right now, but we just fell short, unfortunately. When it came to Weissert, it's funny because he's not a big K guy, and he gives up so-so contact. I looked up his stats with runners in scoring position this year, and in 82 plate appearances coming into this, his slash line's pretty decent. Despite that, though, another interesting little split that I noticed while I was searching for that is that coming into this game, he has an ERA at home north of 4 compared to an ERA away of 1.55. Not necessarily saying because of the sample sizes that that's something that's a pattern or that the guy can't pitch in Fenway. Absolutely not saying that just based off of this year, but it is something to keep an eye on.
Yeah, like you were saying, like we had, I don't know why they went to Whitesit. I don't know why they went to Hicks either time. And then they threw, I don't know if they wanted Slayton to have a clean inning to start an inning. If they didn't want to put him in with guys on with the one out. But we had Slayton, we had Bernardino, we had other choices. And then Hicks just can't go through an inning without letting up a run. And that actually was a nice play on that bunt. Like he made a pretty decent play on it. But he still had the guy on first and third to begin with. And I see him warming up and I'm like, all right, well, that's our worst pitcher. And then they put him in the game. And it's like, I don't know why they still feel the need to go to him. And it felt like they maybe didn't even want to waste arms on this game. Kind of felt like maybe they were waving the white flag a little bit. I don't know why we saw Sogard and Wong hit in the ninth. I don't know why we're not pinch hitting. It kind of just felt like we're gonna take this game. We're gonna keep Whitlock. We're gonna keep Chapman for the rest of the series.
Couple things. So just last night, for the first time, I kind of started getting concerned with Whitlock and Chapman's usage. I mean, we've had to go to them a lot because we haven't been putting up runs. Typically, I mean, there's been a lot of 2 and 3 run games that we've won, but those are high stress innings on your bullpen to hold those leads. So I was thinking, man, I mean, we got to start hitting because, you know, we need to go to other guys. I mean, we can't be just bringing these guys in 3 out of every 5 games. And tonight, finally, we couldn't overcome it. You know, you only put up 2 runs and that was it. And you got Bregman, who's seemingly ice cold. Not real worried about it. I think he'll figure it out, but hopefully more sooner than later. I mean, Romy Gonzalez is a hotter hitter right now than Alex Bregman. It's like, and Romy was facing a righty tonight. I mean, he's the lefty killer aside from Ref Snyder, but he's hitting righties right now pretty good. And I think it was, what was it yesterday? I think it was the finale. Romy basically wins you the game, you know, hits that multi-run homer. And so, you know, so I think tonight, I guess I'll wrap up my take with this. I think tonight was a good example of why I don't think we're a deep October team. You're going to face some very good pitching staffs and you better put up runs.
Yeah, 100%. And especially when you do have a guy like Yoshida getting on base twice versus Skeens, you know, Nick Sogard even getting on base in that ninth inning. Rafaela with 2 hits tonight, which was very nice to see. And unfortunately, the guys around them just couldn't do all that much, except for, of course, you're going to be hearing this a lot, Roman Anthony, who hit a beautiful home run off of Paul Skeens, the only Red Sox earned run of the night. That is his, what is it, eighth of the season, I believe. And I mean, just a beautiful shot. The guy is consistent. The guy's power is unlocked. It's amazing. Like you said, Terry, about Bregman, I'm not overly concerned about his cold streak, but it really is. I mean, it's noticeable that when your top guy goes missing, there's not really enough oomph to compensate for that. So I agree. I mean, you asked the other night, is the offense something to be worried about? I think the answer is absolutely yes.
Yeah, 100%. It definitely feels like every time Roman hits a single, Alex is getting doubled up. Feels like it a lot. But and like you guys, I'm not worried about it. But I'd be less worried about it if the playoffs were starting like next week or 2 weeks, because I feel like once the playoffs hit, he has enough experience that we don't have to worry about it. But there's still a month left, so you'd like to see him start picking it up. And, you know, because it's the Yankees, everything's going to be real tight now with the way the schedules are working out, with how easy the Yankees schedule is, how hard the Blue Jays is. And, you know, he's got to pick it up now. He can't wait. We really need him this last month of the season.
Oh, you're muted, Terry.
Oh, yeah, Terry, you're mute.
Sorry, I was talking shit in the stream and didn't want the keyboard to sound like a herd of elephants. But, yeah, so I've said this before. You know, we're going to wrap the year with Toronto, and you're going to wrap the year with Detroit. Those are the last two series. And good chance you're going to face at least one or two of them if you're going to go more than a round. And, you know, maybe that sounds daunting, but I look at it like, well, you're going to figure out who you are in those last two series and whether you belong. And if you get thumped in those two series, well, it's going to be painfully obvious what you're going to need to address as you go into that first game. And there's no doubt at this point, the Red Sox will be playing October baseball. It's just, where are they going to be seated? Will they have any home games in the first round? That's the question.
Yeah, it's a good question too. You know, I think that it was very inconsiderate of Nathaniel Lowe's baby to be born at this time, because we really could have used him tonight. Off the bench or even as a starter. You know, Doug, you mentioned having a guy like Wong, you know, hitting in a big spot. He tried to bunt, and it was just the worst attempt I've ever seen. And I don't know why. This team cannot bunt. And I am not a big bunt guy. You know, I'm not a big bunt guy at all. I'm usually, all right, let's swing, let's put the ball in play, let's see what happens. But in a situation like that, I like the bunt. And when you have a guy who's not even a good hitter, unable to put it down, you really are just, I mean, it's a free out at that point. It was a pop-up. It was terrible. And, you know, it's just frustrating to see, because we keep seeing that from this team all season long, is just bad bunting, bad fundamentals even at times, although I would say that mostly that's been shored up. There was that one defensive play I would like to mention from Nick Sogard, where he made two great defensive plays in the same inning, but Roman Anthony slid under him in the outfield, where Sogard went way back into right field. He did call Anthony off from the looks of it pretty early on, but I know my heart stopped personally at that, of seeing like, oh no, Roman's going to the ground.
You know,
please be okay.
One of the worst collisions I've ever seen was when Adrian Beltre, the 1 year he did play for Boston, just absolutely ran over Jacoby Ellsbury like a Mack truck. And luckily, I mean, Roman doesn't really have an injury history. So, you know, maybe that's due to good genetics. Maybe he's just a smart baseball player and doesn't put himself in a lot of bad positions. I wish Meyer, you know, was like that. But yeah, so I was like, geez. And I mean, Anthony is the best player on this team right now. I best hitter, I should say.
Yeah. I mean, he's got three homers in the last five games. It's really starting to pick up, and he's just and he's great in the field. He's making these catches that he's at the last second. He's like reaching out for, and it's he's like making them look easy. And but he's the real deal, and I like him in the leadoff spot right now. I really like him in the leadoff spot, even. But we have to start giving him some support. Bregman really has to start backing him up.
Most definitely. I agree. I wouldn't even say I've necessarily been pleasantly surprised by Anthony's defense, because I didn't really know what to expect. You know, I expected about average defense. And early on, there were some stumbles, as we've mentioned, but he really has become very good. He made that beautiful throw to third, and you know, he didn't really have a chance to get the guy just because of his speed, but it was right on the money. Really, really good. And I just like, I love how this outfield is coming together, and the idea of potentially next year an Anthony and Sedan and Willier outfield. I mean, that has Gold Glove written all over it. That has defensive run saved written all over it. And it's exciting to see the pieces falling into place. Toley being the latest example of this, of course. We have a lot of young pitchers on this team to build around. And, you know, as excited as I am in the present moment, I can't help but get excited for next year, 2 years from now, the idea of building around this Crochet, Bayo, Dobbins, Toley, and whoever else. You know, it's just fun to see the Red Sox developing young players again. And the only thing we have to hope is that John Henry actually keeps them around this time.
Yeah, the fifth inning was very fun. When Roman hit that home run, and it was like, Toley is rolling right now. Roman's hitting bombs. It was fun. It was, felt good.
And it was just such a great moment for Anthony to hit that off of Skeens.
It was a 99 mile an hour fastball.
The future of MVP voting just crushing the future of Cy Young voting. You know, it just, that was fun to watch. And that's part of why I think he's the best hitter on the team right now. Now, is he a better hitter than Alex Bregman? Maybe I can't go all the way there, but he will be. Yeah. He will be. And I don't know. I mean, who else? I don't know who else there really is. I mean, I think Sedan's always going to be streaky. I think Duran, if we keep him, will have a better year than this year. I'm not a Story guy. And I, you guys weren't here. This was at this point, if you're talking 3 or 4 years, that's 3 or 4 lifetimes in podcasting, as you'll come to find out. But I, from the mountaintops, I wanted Trevor Story. I'm like, why give 300 plus to Correa when you can get Story for half the money, you know? And I got my way, and then I hated it. I, you know, be careful what you wish for. And I'm just so pissed at the first 3 years. I'm like, I still dread what the next couple of years could be like with Story. Now, if you had a crystal ball out and said the guy that you've seen this year is who he will be for the next 2 years remaining on his deal, yeah, I'll calm down a little bit, but I still don't feel great about it, even though I wanted him so bad. And another thing that maybe you guys aren't aware of, when we did our preseason picks for this season, you know, where we give the division winners wild cards, Cy Youngs, MVPs, World Series matchups, it's a fun show that we do right before opening day, usually the Monday before opening day. I put the Red Sox in the World Series. They were my World Series team. I had the Phillies winning it, but I did send the Red Sox there. And as good and as unexpected as this run has been, I don't think I'm not going to take credit for it, because like, we traded Devers. Bueller was a bust, and he was one of my guys last season. I had to have Bueller last winter. You know, so I'm not going to take credit if we go there, and I don't think we're going to get there now, but you know, if we do, then so be it. It'll be great for the podcast.
And talking about Bueller, you know, so he got released.
Yeah.
I was surprised. I'm not, I don't know. especially leading into the playoffs, like part of me still felt like, you know, his playoff career has been very good. Maybe you throw him in relief in the playoffs and he will be good. I still had that optimism a little bit, but like I'm not really upset that they released him, but I was surprised.
Yeah, I think funnily enough, that's another thing that you could probably blame Jordan Hicks for, is the idea that we have a right-hander in the pen that's already a mop-up guy, you know? So where do you put Buehler in that case with Slayton coming back and everything? It does really, really shock me, I guess, because, I mean, I was surprised when they just moved him to the bullpen. You know, I said the other night how I thought that we had sort of passed the point of no return with him. We were ride or die, clearly. And instead, this dude, I mean, just gets straight up cut, you know? It's sort of like an out of respect thing. You know, they said that we're just going to do a full release, go off, find a team. And in theory, if he signs tomorrow, right, or the next day, then he can be playoff eligible for a team. I just don't really know what team would take a gamble on that.
Yeah, I don't know. I probably would have rather have seen him on the mound than Hicks tonight.
Here's why it was a little surprising to me. You have to go all the way back to June 23rd. That was in Anaheim against the Angels when he last gave up 5 earned runs. Okay. He hasn't looked great. Okay, there's been a few since then where he's given up 4 earned runs. He's had some abbreviated outings, which obviously wasn't good for the bullpen. And maybe the underlying metrics do suggest that he's cooked. But it did come a bit of a surprise. I mean, you've got Tolley, you've got May, you've got Harrison if you want him, you got Fitz if you want him. So there's options if... Oh, actually, you might not have Fitz. My bad. I forgot. Yeah, he got hurt. But still, the other 3. So it was a little surprising. Now, here's one thing that I forgot to mention in the war room earlier. I think he gets $500,000 for every 2 starts that he pitches from here out. And actually, that started, ironically, right around the time they pulled him from the rotation. And so they would have roughly might have been on the hook for another $1.5 million. I bet that was a factor.
Yeah.
I'm not going to say unequivocally, but yeah.
I wouldn't doubt that one bit. I mean, I was surprised they allowed him to earn those incentives as long as they did. I think he got it was either 1 or 2 rounds of those extra starts in of the incentives. And it really wasn't worth it. You have to wonder behind the scenes, did he take issue with being moved to the bullpen, or did we really say there's no role for you here? I mean, it's hard to keep Hicks on the team right now, but when he is still owed so much money for a few more years and relievers are volatile, you know, it's tough to let go of that when you have a guy who's leaving in winter anyway.
Yeah, I mean, and I was ready to, you know, to see Peyton tonight and make, you know, see how it is, see if he could be the next, you know, the 4th starter. And I mean, I think I saw all I need to see. I would rather see him on the mound starting a game in the playoffs than Dustin May at this point.
Most definitely. Most definitely. Yeah,
and,
I mean,
you know, which moves made to the pen, which, you know, If May was in the pen and he was in instead of Hicks tonight, I'd probably would have rather have seen that.
One of the beat writers had a tweet where apparently all of Buehler's stuff was in his locker still. So it was an abrupt decision. Wow. You know, I mean, if he was told last night, obviously the locker gets cleared out. If they were really planning on DFAing him, like if that was the plan at 8 a.m. this morning, they could have, or I should say releasing him. I'm still not sure how they can do that without DFAing him as part of the process. That puts him on waivers until all 30 teams decline. which can take anywhere from an hour to a full day. But so maybe we'll get clarity on that soon. But they could have, if they knew they were going to do it this morning, they could have called him and said, "Hey, Walker, got some bad news. This is what's going to happen. If you want to clean out your locker before anyone gets here, players, media, fans, by all means, come in and get it." And that didn't happen. So, like I said, maybe we'll get some clarity on that, in the next 24, 48 hours. But I was a little surprised.
I hope we do. I hope we do get clarity, because it is surprising. And I feel bad for Walker, but it just wasn't working. But you're right. He did seem to be at least making some improvements lately. And it's just so interesting that at the deadline we trade for May, who seems to be Walker Buehler-esque in a lot of ways. And unfortunately, I mean, Buehler just gets pushed out. I think everyone wanted Buehler. Anyone who says that they weren't hyped for that signing, I'd be a little skeptical, you know, so I won't give you too much flack for that, Terry, for sure. You know, the guy had upside, and it's definitely just a shame that he's going to go down as probably one of the bigger busts in at least recent Red Sox history.
Yeah. We needed two pitchers last winter. I mean, that was the consensus, and we did. We got two. We got Crochet and we got Buehler. And Buehler was the guy I had slotted as my number two guy, and I wanted an ace. I'm not going to go into my mindset, but we eventually got him. Crochet was the guy. And, you know, I was so pumped. And I've mentioned this previously, but I guess I'll do it one more time. We got really lucky because the Red Sox wanted to sign Buehler to a 3-year deal. And Buehler was like, "Nope, I'm betting on myself. I think I can get a much better offer next year by taking the 1 year." So the Red Sox, or Breslow, I'm assuming, said, "Okay, fine. That's fair. Let's just do 1 year then." And, you know, there's that saying, who's the dummy? And in this case, it was both of them. You know, Breslow nearly screwed himself, and tried to screw himself, and then Buehler did screw himself. So, but yeah, his run through the postseason last year, I was like, that's awesome. That's probably who he is. He just needed the regular season last year to get right. And, you know, as far as May goes, Dustin May, he's at least got velocity. I mean, we saw him touch a 98. So, you know, I don't know. I mean, he's been hot and cold. And I think, is he still in the rotation with Tolley?
He is, yeah.
Yeah, I
at
would
least
think
last
that's
that I
still
know.
Gonna get
right.
Start.
But yeah, but with if the playoffs start, if they shrink that to four instead of five, I would think Tolley gets that spot.
I'd agree.
Well, we'll see. Let's not jump the gun. Yeah. I mean, there's going to be tape on him in a few more starts, so we'll see if he can kind of stay ahead of the offense. But, you know, if he typically, those young guys, they'll be good for a few times, and then they're going to labor and probably not get through five full. So,
Yeah, that's why maybe bringing them up late was a good call.
And, you know, maybe one could piggyback off the other. You could do that as your fourth starter. So,
yeah,
but we'll see. I've jumped the gun on so many things, and I've taken so many L's already, Buehler being one of them.
I'm big on Tolley. I have been before he was up. I'm just really big on this kid.
It was just so fast, you know, through the minors. That's another reason why I have pause. I mean, from the offensive side, that's what Campbell did, you know, just kind of came out of nowhere, you know, single A, and then he was in triple A, you know? So
yeah, I mean, this kid totally was pitching in college last year.
That's insane. So the one guy that got ruined, I don't know if you remember him. I think it's Brandon Finnegan was drafted by the Royals and then pitching in the World Series that same year.
Oh yeah. I do remember that.
That's just that. And then he,
I think Jason brought him up, actually. I think Jason brought him up in the pod the other day, yeah.
Oh, okay. And, you know, and then he never really made it as a starter. I think he was a serviceable reliever for a while, but I don't think the expectations were really met.
Yeah. I think it was Mondesi, too. I'm trying to fact check right now. I believe Adalberto Mondesi made his debut in the World Series. He was on the 40-man, and so playoff eligible. And then they called him up for the 2015 World Series, the Royals did. So that's pretty amazing. Yeah, just on Wikipedia here, it says he became the first player since Bug Holiday in 1885 to make his major league debut during a championship series. Just amazing. I mean,
I love the old names. The old baseball names are the best.
You know what I love so much about Tolley is, well, everyone's in love with the kid. I mean, you heard the ovations tonight, both at the start, at the end of like every inning, and then when he got pulled out. The guy got like six standing ovations tonight, and it was well deserved. And I love about the dude is he's 22 years old, and he looks like a truck driver. I mean, this guy really does have just psycho energy out there. He's so emotionally, so amped up, sticking his tongue out, making motions, fist pumping. There was that one play where Bregman made a smooth play over at third, and Tolley just gave him a look. And you could tell, like, oh, he was pumped to have that type of defense behind him. I mean, it's hard not to love a prospect who comes up, shoves, and has such good energy like that. And you're right, Terry, that, you know, we shouldn't get ahead of ourselves. There's still really a whole month to go, you know, a lot of starts. But, I mean, right now, oh, I want to bet on this kid so much. I really do.
Yeah, I mean, 6'6", 250 with a big mustache, that that wins me over every time.
No kidding. And seems like such a nice guy, too, from what we saw from the footage of him getting called up and whatnot. Seems like a very humble kid.
Yeah, yeah. That Bregman play, he was just laughing. He was just like, that's big league defense, right? You could just see it on his face. Like, I'm playing in the big leagues now. That hit's getting through at the Woo Sox.
Guys, I'm not going to lie. If the camera's on him the right way, the dude looks like he's in his 50s with that mustache.
Oh, yeah, he does. 21-year-old.
I tweeted out on my personal account. I'm like, I'm 42 years old. I'm the oldest on this podcast, and Jeremy will be right there with me shortly, just for the record. But he looks like he could be my dad. Like, and he towers over me. You know, I'm 5'9", I'm just, you know, average height, and Tolley, I guess, is 6'6". But yeah, I just, it's crazy how old he gets. He almost looks like the Parks and Recreations guy. I forget his name. Yeah.
Ron Swanson.
That's who I see. Yeah. Yeah. So I just, yeah. Another thing about Tolley too, like Breslow is a big, like, extension is his favorite metric, because they're harder to read, apparently. You know, they release the ball closer to the plate. And there's been some other guys that he's acquired that, you know, where he coveted that. So we'll see. But, I mean, the future's bright, but I'm just not giving him game three of the World Series just yet.
Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah, for sure. You know, speaking of facial hair, I was very relieved to see that Paul Skenes had grown out the beard a little bit, changed it up, because when he was just rocking the mustache solo, he did look like he belonged on a list of some sort.
Yeah, it was tough.
But no, I mean, Skenes, I don't watch him that much, obviously, you know, not too often do I turn on a Pirates game, but every time you see this dude, it was just, it's just like you see the star potential. And despite that, we were finding ways to get on base versus him. And it was very encouraging, which I think made the loss all the more disheartening. You know, I tweeted out that the worst thing that this Red Sox team can do to you, it's giving you hope. You know, I'm like, I was totally mentally prepared. It's a Skenes day. We've got a rookie starting, whatever. We're going to lose this game. But to almost get there, you know, and blow it just because of bad bullpen performances on account of Hicks and Weissert. You know, it's just a bummer, because it really does feel like, this could have been one of those 3-2 walk-offs if only we played our cards right.
I thought it was going to happen that way. I mean, you get Skeens out of there, I think after six, wasn't it?
Yep. Yeah. Yeah.
And so I'm like, all right. Yeah, well,
close to 100 pitches after.
Yeah, I mean, he wasn't super efficient. He wasn't terrible, and then the defense let him down a bit. Yeah. So that kind of got the count up there. And I'm like, all right, we got three runs. I mean, this is drawing up just like several games in the last couple weeks here. And surprisingly, I mean, that the back end of that bullpen, as Nick pointed out, was very good. And you know, and then Sadon came up. I can't remember if that was the eighth or ninth. But
the ninth, yeah. I think it was 7, 8, 9, right in the ninth.
Okay. And he had a bad strike two call. Clearly wasn't a strike, but the umpire gave it to the pitcher.
Real,
and then
real bad, real low.
And then he either struck out or flew out. But
yeah, he struck out. He missed the ball by a mile.
I thought that could have been the moment. You know?
It was a slider that wasn't even ever close to the plate. And he swung at it, and he missed it by a mile.
Yeah. So, you know, it is what it is, but it was a winnable game, an unexpectedly winnable game, because I thought Skeens was going to pitch eight innings of one-run ball, and sucks to be Toley to draw that for your first, you know, start, but... But unexpectedly, it was a winnable game. And, you know, Roman Anthony had that epic home run off of Skeens, the only earned run that Skeens gave up. And it just felt like one of those nights we're just going to keep skating with these low scoring wins. But it was Weissert instead of Bernardino.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, 1-for-7 with runners in scoring position yet again. Embarrassingly, though, the Pirates were 2-for-13. And I'm just thinking to myself, how did we let this Pirates offense get 13 opportunities with runners in scoring position? That's really bad. I mean, you like look at their lineup tonight, you sort by OPS, you know, a whole lot of sixes, a five, two fives in there. I mean, just. Their 2-5 tonight I thought was pretty decent, but their leadoff and their 6-9, it was just not a good offense. I mean, but it got the job done. I thought it was a pretty soft landing for Toley too. You know, I mean, this is probably the next step up from AAA. Realistically, you're playing a major league team. All these guys are major league talents, but some of them are major league talents, you know, so to speak. Hopefully the listeners, only the audio listeners, can hear the air quotes in my voice. Because, I mean, it's a rough group of hitters. But, you know, you have guys like McCutchen who are still hanging around and still putting up professional at-bats. Guys like Reynolds and Pham who can still do good work. And tonight, you know, they got the job done.
Definitely. And Toley, he deserved every bit of that standing O. Walking out. I mean, AK's 14 swing and misses. You know, not maybe the worst lineup in the league, but 14 swing and misses on your debut, that gets me excited.
Yeah.
I'm just trying to map out Toley's possible thing. So he pitched on Friday. So 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. He'll pitch on Tuesday, assuming nothing weird happens with the order. So that'll be against the Guardians. That'll be an interesting start for him. And then it looks like he'll catch game one out in Sacramento, as we'll call it, against the A's. And then he'll get game one. Nope. Game three against the Yankees on national television on the 14th. So that's assuming he goes every fifth game, and who knows, you know, what'll happen. But so Guardians, A's, and the Yankees. Now the Guardians offense, not super robust. The A's, as bad as they are, they can mash. You got Rooker. Did they trade Soderstrom? They might have, actually. I can't remember.
Did they?
Maybe they didn't.
I don't think so. Let me check.
Their rookies are just mashing.
Yeah, Nick Kurtz also. Yeah. Is he going to be – who's going to be rookie of the year on the American League side?
Probably him.
Probably Kurtz.
Okay. Yeah. That's what I thought.
And, yeah, Soderstrom is still playing for him.
It's still playing for him. Okay. Yep. I couldn't remember. So, yeah, so that – yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I forgot he debuted at 21. A pretty dismal debut, too. But, I mean, turn it around. He's mashing now.
Yeah, and he, you know what? He slipped down close to the Mendoza line, but he's got his average back up to 274 with a 347 on base. OPS plus of 124. His line all the way across looks really well. So he had a mid-season slump, but seems to have figured it out.
Yeah, they're, you know, I've been saying it. The Athletics, they feel like a little bit of a trap series to me where I'm like, I'm not taking that offense for granted. They're feisty. That's a feisty team right there. And they've been pretty good since the All-Star break as well, I'm pretty sure. I'll actually double check that number.
Yeah, and it's out west too, so it's kind of we've actually played out there fine the last couple of years, but the few years leading into that, it just seemed like whenever we went west, we got just absolutely destroyed.
Yeah, they're trailing right now, only in the third inning, 2-0 against the Rangers. But prior to this game, they were 22-15 after the All-Star break, playing pretty good baseball.
Yeah.
They did that last year as well. A lot more unexpectedly. Yeah. Man, I love Moneyball. I watch it three times every winter, and it just makes me root for the Rays the A's. getting my Moneyball teams mixed up. You know, Billy Bean, I think, is still there. I don't know if his role is quite the same, but I don't know. I get sympathetic with Oakland. And I remember that year John Lester pitched, and was it the one game wild card? They had the seesaw game against the Kansas City Royals, and neither team could hold the lead until the Royals finally ended up winning it. And they went to the World Series that year, lost to the Giants, and then won it the next year, as we know. But yeah, so I just typically, I mean, I've always found Oakland to be a hard team to root against, but they just don't spend money. And I don't think moving to Vegas is really going to fix that. I still expect them to be a small market team. And, you know, I think they did win the Stanley Cup with the Knights, didn't they? The Golden Knights. Yeah. Yep. And the football team could be good eventually. And it's so ironic because I was just thinking about that with Pittsburgh tonight. I'm like, man, they have a football team that's one of the most celebrated in the history of the NFL. But their baseball team, they don't even make an effort. You know, it's weird how a city can have two franchises with totally different mindsets.
Not everyone's as lucky as Boston, Terry.
Yeah. Ain't that the truth?
Yeah, I know. And Kansas City, you know, with the Chiefs, obviously, you know, they're the closest thing to the Patriots since the Patriots. And you know, and they do make an effort with their baseball team. Maybe they're just smarter, you know, when it comes to signings and how they develop, because I mean, they're never even really a mid-market payroll, but the Royals are at least relevant. Typically,
I don't see Vegas like giving the A's a higher payroll, but I could see it getting them a higher attendance.
Yeah,
they should. And I hate it when teams go to Vegas because it's such a transient town. You know, it's almost like Tampa Bay Rays in Tampa. Nobody in Tampa is from Tampa. They're all Yankees fans and Red Sox fans and wherever they came from, maybe even Chicago, there's a lot of people down there.
Yeah.
So it's never going to be this romantic fan base. Like if you went back to Montreal, that would be epic. Like that's a community that wants a baseball team so bad. Like, that's my number one choice. Don't mention anybody else. Just give Montreal a team. It would fit good in the realignment that they're teasing, which I don't know how I feel about that. That's a conversation for this winter when we're desperate for content. Yeah. But yeah, so I don't know. I hate the idea of Vegas, and it sucks that the A's are going to be going there, in my opinion.
I feel bad for Oakland in general. I mean, they've lost their football team and now their baseball team. And it's a shame, too, because honestly, the Oakland fans have always been almost dangerously passionate, you know, at least when it came to Raiders football.
Yeah. They lost the Warriors, too. The Warriors moved from, they were always in Oakland. They moved to San Fran like 2 years ago.
It's brutal. It's sad because, you know, the Oakland A's, I do feel like they're a team that's just starting to put it together again. You know, you go back to around 2017, 2018, they had a pretty good roster. A lot of great players in the league still today started out as A's. And they sold off, as they do. And now they have this beautiful core that they're coming around. They have multiple rookie of the years, where earlier it was, I think it was that shortstop of theirs. What's his name? Wilson? Something like that, I think. He was, you know, the early rookie of the year. Yeah. And then Nick Kurtz comes out of nowhere and just absolutely starts mashing like crazy. And, you know, like Terry brought up, Soderstrom's great. They've got a lot of guys. They just signed Luis Severino. Haven't checked on his numbers in a while, but I think he started off pretty decent. And it's just such a shame that the ownership of that team is like, all right, we're finally starting to put together a squad. Now we're going to push it somewhere else.
Yeah. I've always enjoyed watching the A's. You know, one of the best jerseys in the league. I always thought, you know, I always like watching them.
I think they also have. I love the green and gold. I hope they keep.
Yeah, I love their color scheme. Yeah, their whites always pop for some reason. Their whites are really white, I felt like. Yeah, and their greens and their yellows. I like theirs a lot.
So Luis Severino, at quick glance, has a 4.82 ERA. His strikeouts are way below his innings pitched. 136 in a third innings pitched, only 103 strikeouts, a 1.34 whip. That's really high. But in his last five starts, he has not given up more than three runs. And in all but one of those five, he's gone at least five full. And actually went seven innings against Houston, two earned runs, eight strikeouts. So that's just lining up perfectly.
Yeah, no kidding.
So yeah.
Yeah, I don't know why we just turned into the Bastards of Oakland briefly here, but it is interesting to glance around the league from time to time.
Yeah, and you know, we're scoreboard watching as we go. I'm not worried about it. Like I said, it's just, I know we're a playoff team. It's just, you know, what seed are we going to be? In a way, and maybe this is sacrilegious as hell, but it may as well be me to give this take. I don't want the Red Sox to have any home games in the first round because screw John Henry. If we win that round, let it play out after that. I don't care. I hope we go all the way. But I don't think John Henry deserves home games.
I totally get that. I think that's very fair. I guess, you know, a big part of our journey into the playoffs is going to be the next two games. Hopefully we can win this series. Tomorrow, we're looking at a 4:10 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time start. That will be Johan Oviedo versus Dustin May. And then the next day, we will have a 1:35 p.m. start. Mitch Keller versus Lucas Giolito. How are you guys feeling about those?
Go ahead, Doug.
Yeah, I was muted. I don't feel great about Dustin May starts, but you know, if there's one team you can feel okay about a Dustin May start, you know, it's the Pirates. So, you know, if we can just, you know, give him some support, you know, I don't have no faith in Dustin May. It's not like when he takes them on, I'm like, well, this is a loss. I don't think that, but I'm just not confident, super confident in guaranteeing the win either.
Yeah, just looking at Johan Oviedo, pretty impressive season. Only what, a 3.60 ERA? That's up close to a point. Oh, he's only pitched 10 innings though. Oh, cancel that take.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's just go by his last two starts then. One was against Toronto, 5 innings pitched, only gave up 1 earned, struck out 6. That would play very well against us. And then against St. Louis, who surprisingly hasn't been terrible. I mean, he went 4 innings, just 1 earned, 5 strikeouts. And it looks like he was pitching in relief prior to those two starts. So probably not a guy who's going to go super deep, but I could see us not putting up runs and then needing to tattoo that bullpen and possibly not doing it. And then on Sunday, I'm not gonna jinx it, but I think that's a scheduled W with Giolito out there, and I just want to see him continue you know, from his start against the Orioles.
Agreed.
Definitely. Yeah, you know, Mitch Keller, Lucas Giolito, I think on paper prior to the Tolley announcement would have been, oh, that's going to be a really good matchup. That's probably going to be the most, you know, even of the series. And then suddenly, you know, it's Skeens versus Tolley. And so they get bumped down a slot, right? But Mitch Keller versus Giolito should be a lot of fun. I do have faith in Giolito, especially when you just compare the difference of offenses. You know, I honestly think, as much as I will rag on the Red Sox offense from time to time, I almost think that if you swapped their teams around, Keller versus Giolito, I'd favor Keller. But with, you know, the Red Sox behind him, I think Giolito can get enough run support and do enough damage specifically to the Pirates to hopefully secure that victory. When it comes to this Johan guy, it's true. Only 3 starts on the season. He was off the map last year. I didn't look up why, but 27 years old, didn't pitch at all in 2024 in the majors. He was a full-time starter in 2023, wasn't very good, was so-so from the looks of it, a 4.3 ERA in 32 starts. This year, off to a good start. He could build on that. Maybe Dustin May surprises us. Obviously, the Yankees banged him up, but he looked okay versus Baltimore, and he actually looked very good versus Houston. So out of his 4 starts, you have 2 really bad ones, 2 pretty good ones. Hopefully he tips the scales in our favor. I guess I'll be positive and I'll say we're going for a series victory here, but we'll see.
I'm with you.
Yep.
Do you guys know who the manager of the Pirates is?
No,
I don't either.
No,
I don't even remember the other guy's name that they fired. But you got to believe Ben Charrington like had a pep talk and being like, listen, this team, they fired me 2 years after I won them a title. You know, let's not take it easy on them. You know, so maybe there's some of that going on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I saw him walk out to the mound tonight, or maybe it was the pitching coach. I saw shots of the dugout. I don't think I could pick out the Pittsburgh's current manager from a lineup, to be completely truthful with you. But, you know, Doug, you said not every team can be as lucky as Boston, or city can be as lucky as Boston. It's true, you know, as much as there is to gripe about, we're putting together a decent season for the first time in a few years. You know, 2021, we had that miracle run. This team right now feels immensely more positive in the direction that it's heading in. And, you know, Terry, I think you brought that up on the Bastards account not too long ago when you sparked the discussion of, is this team just going to be another 2021 in where it ends up? Regardless of whether we are just a sort of flash in the pan, maybe make a miracle run into the ALCS, we are in much better position for 2026, certainly, thanks to this year, than we were in 2022, at least hopefully.
The future's bright. I won't deny that. But, I mean, it's just, it's not built like a deep postseason team. They had the opportunities to do it, as we have covered all year long, but they chose not to.
Yeah.
So that's why I don't want the Red Sox to have any home games in the first round. I want them to be the 4 or the 5 seed.
For sure. You know, you've got to ultimately build a juggernaut these days to win a World Series, because you know darn well other teams are doing so. We'll see if we can pick up a win tomorrow, though, even up the series before hopefully going for a win. I've been Nick, joined by Doug and Terry. We have been the Bastards of Boston. Thank you guys so much for joining us and listening in. We do appreciate it. And we'll see you next time. Go Red Sox.